Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. It's fall. Today is, the 9th? September 9th? 8th? It's summer's over.
It's also not fall. Chill out.
Yeah, it's still hot.
Well, you know, after Labor Day, I count fall after Labor Day. I know it's
but it's still hot outside.
Yeah, it's still warm, but you know, it's
but
done.
But also, how is it a week into September? Like, it's not just the beginning of September. It's a week.
We end. Football season starts actually tonight because it's the first game on Thursday. And we're going to try and be, you know, much more consistent than we know. We had the summer off, and all of us did a lot of shit this summer.
A lot going on.
So we
are
back,
we in
though.
Four different states right now?
Yeah.
Yes.
We are.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. For all across the country.
Four different states, three different time zones.
Yep. Pop Life Podcast.
Pull it together.
Pop Life Podcast is bringing you shit from all over the country, from worldwide. So yeah, let's get it started. Like Hammer says, I think I'm gonna start using that every show until I forget to use it.
Which is next week.
Yeah, next week I'll be like, I forgot to say the Hammer shit. All right, but right now let's get it started. I want to say RIP to comedian David Arnold, yeah, who passed away. There's no details. Maybe it's yesterday.
It's
that
natural causes.
Yeah, this is what's, you know, and it could, I'm not saying nobody's lying. I don't know, and maybe we'll never know. But it's right. Just like, he did an interview with Tiffany Cross on MSNBC, I think like last week.
Right.
And he looked, I mean, you never know, but looked great.
Well, a couple things. That might have been a stock interview. They might have held that in the can.
He might have
taped that a while ago. From what I read, there's no specific cause of death. It just lists natural causes. But what it does say is that he was surrounded by family and friends. That's usually an indication of they were expecting this. Yeah. Like this was not a secret.
Or, yeah, even some if sort it of was illness. Quick, it could have been like an aneurysm or something like that.
Exactly. That maybe sped up what they kind of knew was coming. And it was interesting because his last special, which I really enjoyed, it spoke a lot about his young adulthood and like his family. And there's an entire part where he like goes back home, and it's just very.
And where'd he grow up?
Prodigals, Cleveland.
He's a Midwest nigga. Yeah,
he's a Midwest. Dude.
Yeah.
And he's like a prodigal. So you know, like he just returned home to kind of to go through stuff and talk with his pops and his things like that, or stepdad. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just. I mean, now looking back on it, it felt very reflective in a way. I mean, with his passing, but you know, look, he was 54. He had a hell of a 54-year-old run.
I didn't know he was a showrunner on the Lele Show.
He was a showrunner. He was a writer.
Yeah.
David is art like creator, a comedian's. Yeah. David's a comedian's comedian, right? Yeah. Like he's the kind of guy that when the comedians hit that bump in the road, or they can't really quite get over the hump, or maybe they need a little bit of help working out a joke. Yeah, he's that kind of guy. So he never had this massive career in the Kevin Hart sense.
He had that respect.
Or Cat Williamson. Yeah, he works. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? David was never going to sell out Radio City three nights in a row, but the people who went to see him were really into the comic shit. Like they were really for real about it. So you know, a lot of the guys, Chris Spencer and all of those sorts of guys, you know, they know him. They've worked with him for years. Mm-hmm. They were friends. So,
yeah,
RIP to him, man.
Yeah, RIP to him and you know, blessings to him, his family. There's so much to talk
Speaking
about.
Of RIPs, talk so long. Though, the family has gathered at Balmoral, the royal family, because the queen is trying to check out today.
Now,
goddamn, Liz. I mean, she's tired.
Yeah, what is she? 90,
96.
Six, yeah. 97. Yeah, yeah. So it's, Liz, I mean, a hell of a run.
They keep trying to put her off, man. She ain't going nowhere, bro.
She going home. Yeah. She going.
But
she
I think this going, one is serious.
She going yeah, she's going like, home. She's going home.
Meghan and Harry are like flying over everybody.
They gonna get there. Ain't gonna be nothing but some gas.
She waiting on Harry. She waiting on Harry.
Jason Lee the exclusive.
Once Harry get there, then she's gonna go. She's waiting on Harry to come on home, and then she's gonna let go.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
You ain't leaving until Harry get there.
They're gonna double back on that old ass. I told you, niggas.
The cousins we talk. What time Harry and them land? What time they get in here? Who picking them up from the airport?
So, yeah. 96 years old.
Yeah. Hell of a run.
Prince Charles immediately becomes king.
That's what I want to know. Is Charles going to become king, or are they going to skip to William?
They can't skip
unless he abdicates or unless there was some reason to disinherit.
Will the Camilla relationship affect that?
Nah.
He becomes queen regent, not full queen, because
at first he wasn't going to have a title at all, and then Elizabeth conceded in recent years and decided she could. So age has softened a lot of that shit, like,
man,
and also the Prince Andrew allegations, because if he abdicates then it goes to Andrew and he isn't having that shit.
Oh,
because I feel like he would do it for Camilla. If Camilla didn't have a title and they weren't going to respect his royalty, I think he would bow out.
And also, like, after I watched The Crown, the thing about Elizabeth, and, like, listen, any monarchy is not without its bullshit, because the entire concept of a monarchy, even though they're not technically ruling like they used to anymore, is problematic. But I imagine what it must feel like to have lived through, to have seen the world change as much as she has seen it change.
World wars, Hitler, like, you know, Vietnam War. Everything's like happening in Europe.
Wars, the world developments, politics, social.
All the prime ministers from Churchill on to now. Yeah, everything.
Even just the role of the monarchy, right? The modernization of the world, digital shit, the tabloids, that I marvel at her just for that alone, because we don't have too many people left who just have seen that much
that type of history.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking on that, the there's a Princess Di documentary on HBO Max, which it's is excellent. So it's excellent.
How much more new is there to say? Like, what is it? What is
it? It wasn't that it was new. Go ahead.
They were using footage from, it was like strictly paparazzi footage.
Yeah, pretty
and
much.
And a narrator stringing it together. Like,
no, there was no narrator. That was it. It was no narration.
Oh, right.
There was no narration, and there was no interviews.
People, no interviews. It was just all the coverage kind of
telling
together.
The story. Yes, it was the coverage from the paparazzi telling her life story. So there's no like sit down with this one and that one. It just tells the story via the paparazzi footage, obviously, because that's how, you know, allegedly. I still say allegedly she was murdered, but it was just very interesting to watch it and watch her, you know, from this 18 to 19 year old kid when it first started to just show like even the physical changes and how the stress changed her face. Like she actually got, cause she died. She was only 36.
Right.
Yeah. She wasn't like an old lady, but you just saw the stress just kind of change her face. And then you saw the kind of, okay, so the stress kind of changes her face. Obviously, gets hardened a bit, and then it kind of softens again when she gets into the "I don't give a fuck" phase of her life.
Right.
Yeah. She started baring them shoulders.
Exactly. Knocking niggas out and started, you know, dating Dodie, and you know, and you kind of see all of it. And then it was interesting also because when she, especially, they showed how the paparazzi, which is what they do, molded her, brought her up to the highest of heights. tore all the way the fuck down, right? And then how, when she died, then, you know, brought her back up again. And how the people of the, how they showed, there's some people in the country who was like foul as shit about her and saying fucked up shit about her. And then there was also super protective people of her. And then when she died, like the whole country obviously was in shock. And they had footage, the footage of Harry and William, because, you know, it's super young back then. It was just like, fuck.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, because like it's their mom. You know what I'm saying? And it would show, you know, she was like, you know, hanging out with them and going skiing. And you could sit down. That's had a very close
relationship. It felt like the death of any part of normalcy that they had, because she was very big on, like, these are children and they should be treated as such. So I think that ending, like, her life ending was very much the start of them being harder.
Yeah. Because like Inga said, like, they showed her, like, you know, taking them to amusement parks and taking them to ski. Like, they did kid. It was riding doing kid shit. Yeah, riding the D cups and all. Like, she was really trying to keep them children as much as possible. It's just really good, and it's really well done. Right. So, but I'm, you know, I want to dwell on that. So, okay. So the next thing, I'm gonna jump into this real quick. So me and Bro had a debate online because Hunt for Jesus, which I haven't seen yet, I'm gonna see. But if y'all want to talk about it, please go ahead. Yeah, yeah. If y'all, if I'm the only one that hasn't seen, hey Inga, I mean Inga, Ivy. Well, she looked, you know, she looked like a mama.
You lied.
You're the only one that says that.
You lying? He's just trying to make up.
I did lie. I lied. That she do look like a, she do look just like a daddy. Daddy. Daddy couldn't, you know, he spit that one out. But me and Bro was debating online because Uncle Jesus, there's a scene in Uncle Jesus where Regina Hall and what's the old boy's name?
Sterling Brown.
Yes. Brown. They do Knuck If You Buck in the car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I said, I was a little perturbed reading that they said, both of them said, this is the first time they had ever heard the song.
So when did they say they didn't know the song?
They said they never heard the song before the movie.
Okay.
I said, that's crazy to me.
Right.
Bruh said, bro, you speak for yourself. Go ahead now.
Wait. Where is Sterling from? Because we know
Sterling's from St. Louis. He's from St. Louis.
Stanford. He and his wife went to Stanford.
Yeah, he was.
St.
Louis. I think that's an important. I think that those are important caveats in him. Okay.
Let's get some.
Regina Hall is also like 52 years old.
Yes.
Right. And she was deep into LA, into her acting career when Knuck and You Buck was outside.
Right.
Early aughts?
Early aughts. She was absolutely in LA, you know what I'm saying? Like 2004 is when this song came out.
Let me just say, I was of club age in the early aughts, right? But I was also not in this country. So I had not heard Knuck If
That makes sense. So
probably 2010.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. It wasn't
for some years. Yeah,
it wasn't international, like, hits. So that makes sense.
When it was hot, like, even when I would come home and go to clubs, that wasn't something they were playing in Baltimore and D.C.
And I can see them happening in L.A. because Best Man was 2000, so we do know.
I was just about to say. I was the only thing that I'm saying here is that I think Knuck If You Buck was at the time and at its peak more of a regional song. If you were in Mobile, if you were in fucking Mississippi or Louisiana or Atlanta, or if you were anywhere south of South Carolina, north of fucking Orlando, basically maybe as far west as maybe what, Dallas, Houston?
Yeah,
I don't know that it had the same ring outside of that. Now,
if you were college age or video watching age, you had a chance of hearing it.
Yes,
because
if you consume, like, that's the thing. Like, to me, it's not just an age thing. It's also where were you in your life.
Yeah.
Because while I might have been of that age, nigga, I was like a dad for real by that point. Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying? And this was really like the last era of sort of top 40 radio really making waves in that way. Mm-hmm. Like, I think right after this, we kind of got into the iPod era and the digital era. So right. I think that the sales of that record is I wouldn't say skewed because it was a big record. I'm not saying right. it was not a big record. But
platinum single.
Yes, it's a platinum single at a time when you still had to physically go buy music. Right. So I think yeah. that kind of gives some, we have to give a little bit of context with that. And it's not strange that a 51-year-old from DC and a 46-year-old from fucking Missouri by way of Stanford University was not knucking if you bucking. Like they were not.
But my point is this.
They weren't standing on couches.
I get. My point is this though. The record's been out 18 years. Have you not heard it one time? Even but now, like, going to Essence Fest. Going to Essence Fest. Going to somebody.
Maybe they've heard it, but it's not registered. Do you know how many songs I've heard and they're not registered? Especially if you're hearing it in the middle
but
of a
but that's
set.
But that's such
everybody
a.
Everybody
but that's
don't be in the streets
that,
like you, Jeff.
No, I got you.
Hold on. You be outside with the 18-year-olds.
Like,
you been
outside.
You've been
with
outside
with platinum blonde hair, nigga. Like you all the way outside.
Like we not gonna sit here and pretend like you really don't be outside.
No.
I think you have a war. I think you let me explain what I mean by your work sense. Because of your profession, in all seriousness, because of your profession, you are more in tune with what is going on in clubs in a way that most people are not. Okay. That shit is not okay. registering. When you go to a club, it is not purely for enjoyment because the nature of what you do has you people watching and, mm-hmm. and paying attention to some degree because you're trying to see where the curve is going. Where is this headed? Is this dead? Is this not dead? So I think you pay attention in a way that is very unique from an average person. And an average person is not necessarily... listen to that now,
the three of us being from and I'm gonna include you Inka just because you're a hot girl, but the three of us being in the entertainment industry and also being like for real like hip-hop 40 something year olds, we assume that all our peers are just like us and they're not like Man. Even just the same, you know, the terms we know, the language we're up on, the songs we're up on, it's not normal for our age at all.
If right? you told me he didn't know Go Shorty, it's your birthday, the
50%? Yeah, in the club.
Okay, grandmothers know that record.
Yeah. Right.
That is, if you told me.
You said he didn't know Back That Ass Up.
Back That Ass Up, or y'all gonna make me lose my mind, or one of those records right. that. They be singing in church, nigga. They really be singing.
Yeah, they be flipping. They be flipping the lyrics.
Church, nigga.
Right.
I'm just saying it was a great regional record. I also think it took on a life of its own as, and I'm going to say this. This ain't Jeff. This ain't nobody else. This is me. A lot of you niggas got real blackety black after the HBCU graduation. Okay. Right. And then y'all started to, and you wanted to embrace it. And you took Nuck If You Buck a little bit to the other side. Yep. A lot of niggas was not nucking if you bucking. And that is okay. Because you know what? You know what New York niggas was doing? We was doing Annie Up. Okay? And niggas was getting robbed. Yeah. And niggas was getting snuffed out.
Yeah, and slammed by Onyx and all that. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I think that it was a huge record regionally. It was a solid record outside of that region to people who kind of understood that, and it was a real big part of that crunk era. And
yeah,
I think
massive,
that
yeah.
it was a massive record for all the crunk right. era, but that's not surprising to me. She's of a certain age, and he's of a certain age.
I thought
age.
She might have heard it. She came back for homecoming or something. Let's move on.
Where did Regina
Howard? Shoot Howard.
No, she didn't. That's Taraji.
She did.
No, she didn't. She went to NYU.
Oh, I got one confused with Taraji then. Okay. I bet Taraji know that record.
Of course,
but Taraji know that fucking
word. Bird, and I say that with love. Taraji,
she my nigga. She might be in the video, nigga. No,
Taraji still be in the club on the low,
right? On the high, on the low.
No, you're not even on low. On the high. You're right. You're right. All right, my fault. Okay.
Transparent high, yeah.
All right, so I want to give a shout to the goddess Serena. Serena Williams, who basically played her last match on Friday night, U.S. Open. I watched the match. She, you know, great match. She fought her ass off. Took the third set as far as she could take it, but you know, she's just tired. You know, she's 40 years old. She's playing a girl who's 23, I think, or 24 at the most. And so she lost, but she went out like a champion. We saw
some incredibly high level tennis in that game. It was unbelievable. So
she fought back. She didn't quit. She did not quit. She just lost. Some on-force errors, you know. But again, she was tired. Sidebar: peace and love to Ms. Orosine, who had a little Olivia together.
You had to tell everybody how black grandma's.
Ms. Olympia.
Olympia. Olivia, you know what I'm talking about.
If I gotta tell you one more time. What that was.
And then I don't know if you saw on the last match, she took at least two, if not three little black grandma naps at this. Wasn't mad. She's tired. She's been doing this for 25 plus years, going to every match, traveling, tired outside. You know, she took a couple of them little joints of the clothes. And then one time, I think it's her nephew, the boy that was sitting next to Venus. Serena said something. That boy said, What'd she say? But she was giving a full black grandma thing. But again, just peace to Serena for being, you know, in my opinion, the best women's player of all time. And one of the most athletes of all time, period.
One of the most dominant players in tennis of all time, period. Mm-hmm. Changed the sport.
Yeah.
Legit. And just so vital for black women, period, to see her and her
sister. Venus.
And her sister, and her sister, and to just watch them work. You know, and everything they've done, and I wish her rest, and peace, because she busted her ass. I mean, her strength. She's so far past her prime. You know what I'm saying? In theory,
Nobody plays to 40 in tennis. Nobody. Yeah. That's
you're old. You're a dinosaur at like 27, 28.
Yeah. Like 30 is like, nigga, what you doing out here?
Yeah,
for her to make it to 40 is incredible. So that's definitely one to give. Her shout out. Wanted to. I don't know. I guess we discussed a brief on the show, but we're going back a little bit. But the rap shit series ended. I guess two weeks ago now. I really enjoyed this series by Issa Rae. I really enjoyed the series. It took a little bit of time to kick in, but it did kick in, and you know, very interesting because it's based on two girls, and loosely based on the City Girls, and kind of like the Miami hip hop scene, which is obviously very different than other scenes, and their come up and their industry thing, but they kept it very. Would it be millennial or what's next to that? Because there's so much
Gen Z.
Gen Z, yes. So they kept it very Gen Z. So much interaction, like with them showing like the phones and them, you know, going on live all the time, and that kind of like what the world is today. And there's a big cliffhanger at the end, which I won't spoil if anybody hasn't watched it yet. But I really enjoyed that show. And I just want to give one more quick shout to Reservation Dogs, which has been a great season so far. So if you're not watching, that. Bro, you want to talk about the N1 doc or the Tim Donaghy doc on the Untold? You're muted. Can't hear him.
He's still mute.
Oh, you muted?
Sorry.
There you go.
Sorry about that. Yeah, so we could talk about them both really briefly. So Untold, the people who brought us the Manti Te'o story, they had another couple docs. It's really 30 for 30 on steroids. They're shorter, more intense. You know, motherfuckers are cursing. It's live.
It's live.
So they did. They did an Untold on Tim Donaghy, which was the ref who was basically giving insider information. There were questions about whether or not he was fixing games. I personally don't believe he was fixing games, and I'll explain the difference. The difference is that fixing a game is literally going to a player, or going to a player, paying a player to tank, or mm-hmm. to make plays during a game that would not be the actual outcome, or making calls in a game that would impact the score or the outcome of the game.
See, I think there was some of that going on.
I don't think he did either. I think what he did was, I don't think he's lying in that he gave very detailed and inside information to people who were betting on the game. And they were making substantial bets.
Because say mafia.
well,
it was mobsters.
Yes,
it was men.
That dude, to be fair, dude is an associate, and that usually means he was bumping up. That means he was paying a tax to do business.
Yes,
you know, unless he wanted, you know, little Vinny or Big Paulie to come and pay his family and his dog a visit.
Exactly.
You know, he bumped that bread up. So yes, I definitely think that was happening. I absolutely think Tim Donaghy is lying in that he only took this very small amount of
$30,000.
$30,000. That's absolute bullshit. I think he's a lot of things. I don't think he's dumb. Okay. He would not risk a $400,000 a year job for fucking 30 grand. That just makes absolutely fucking no sense. So that I definitely believe he's lying on. But I do believe that he gave information, and do I think he was like one of those refs that kind of feel like they're a part of the game and start mm-hmm. to do, you know? Yeah, I definitely think he was that as well, because he was a whiz kid. He was young. He had just gotten into the league. You know, he was looking at a 25, 30 year career easy. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty, it was a pretty easy doc to watch. And then they did the rise and fall of And1. So And1, hopefully most of our listeners know, was basically a street ball league that was done by an apparel company that was trying to make waves into a very specific shoe and apparel market, which is basketball, you know, specifically kind of like street basketball.
Yeah.
And the story feels a little... as per usual. And what I mean by that is, like, white guys who don't really have this skill or swag to kind of play in those spaces notice that those spaces have a real, you know, cultural significance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they jump on it. I thought the doc was good. Okay, so the one thing I don't like about the doc is that it does not push back. It's really a open lens for the people to talk.
Mm.
So there's not a back and forth. And I felt like those owners were left to say things that were not, that should have been pushed back on.
Absolutely. Okay.
And I want to say, particularly about compensation, that So when I look at a guy who says, you know, hey, you know, we had this company, the company is doing well, da 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 da, and maybe we could have given them stock options so that everyone can kind of, like, you know, enjoy the fruits of the labor, right? When it was time for us to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of me is like, but you never even offered that, dude. Like, exactly. Like, you never, that was never a thing that you offered.
It wasn't ever a choice.
You know why you didn't offer it. So don't get on here now.
It's also not too late, my nigga. Like,
well, it is. It is to some.
Well, the company's been sold several times since then.
It's been sold several times.
I know, but do they still have money? That's what I'm.
No.
The owners seem like they have money.
That's what I'm saying. The owners. It's not too late to compensate them in some way. Clearly, these guys were taping this in their grandmother's front room.
But I also want to say, too, so they were compensated. And when we think of, and a lot of times we tend to feel like we're very labor friendly because many of us are labor and we don't really like to see labor being shorted.
Mm-hmm.
But some of those guys were making very good money for what was tantamount to like 3 months of work, 3-4 months of work. And what they don't really do, and this is, again, what happens when there's no back and forth, is like, all right, my nigga, like, what were you doing in the fall and in the winter? Like, did you just think that $30,000 that you made in this last 3 months was going to be enough to take you through?
Well, see, like, I think that's the thing. Like, the players are cats from the air quotes the inner city, right? So nobody comes from any type of real threat, right? No, or has probably any experience or any type of money. So, like, I remember they were talking and they're like, you know, the highest paid guy, I forget who it was making like, maybe it was Hot Sauce, maybe like 100 racks, right? And then somebody was making, I'm making 60, I'm making 80. But to them, that was some good money because they didn't know no better. You know what I'm saying?
But in fairness though, here's the other thing. Many of them signed these contracts because that is kind of what you did. Many of them did not have a lawyer, and because it was so fast, meaning that shit went from 0 to 1,000 in like a year. It was really that quick.
Yep.
There was no room to kind of maybe double back, or they didn't think to go back and double back to say, yo, nah, we need to get more money than this, or we need to get. And the reality is, dude, is like, this was the deal you signed. The other misconception here is that these were all young kids. Okay.
None of them were really young.
These niggas were all the way grown.
Yeah.
They were grown men with children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these were men who played basketball, who understood what that meant. They clearly saw the arenas. So I'm pretty sure they were not getting merch deals. They were not getting back-end deals. They were not splitting the gate after a certain amount. They were being paid. They were being compensated. This is what it was, and this is kind of what you did. Now, for some of them, they figured out how to move on and stay in this world, and that was kind of high. It was really interesting to see Main Event and Shane the Dribble Machine, because you can clearly see Shane was still very bitter.
Very.
And what I thought of as where he felt like his life had landed. Like, basically being on a clown show with, like, you know, doing the, you know, he was at like this middle of nowhere ass gym.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, he's doing the fucking hokey pokey.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah,
he's in a knockoff Globetrotters.
Yeah, he's in a knockoff Globetrotter league. And like, so I understand why those frustrations are like that. But the reality is that all of those guys had opportunities post and one.
Yeah.
All of those guys had opportunities post and one. You telling me Rafe was the only motherfucker that really got a cup of coffee in the league?
Yeah, Rafe was lucky that, I mean, obviously he had the talent, first of all. But I think Rafe maybe he's had some people around him who kind of steered him in the right direction. The other dudes seemed like they was just, like you said, along for the ride. They just had, they had fun. Yo, we went here,
fucking bitches. I could tell you what the difference is. The difference is always discipline. There was not a lot of difference in talent.
Yes.
The difference is in the discipline. Like Lou Williams said, like, we're professionals. We get up and play basketball when we don't feel like it.
Yep, every day.
And the reason here, the issue here that no one really kind of wants to identify is that those guys did not take or make any additional opportunities after having that platform. So for a guy like Hot Sauce, who is clearly like head and shoulders above in terms of recognition, right, to just literally fall off the face of the earth the moment that this, you know, the moment this thing goes away, is fascinating to me.
To
watch these guys pretend as though they were, you know, these poor wayward children that were, you know,
taking advantage of
listen, Could they have gotten better food? Sure, that shit happens all the time, my nigga. Like, that's not unique to labor and management. It's 24, y'all. You yeah. telling me that 24 you niggas couldn't have a meeting before the game and say, yo, we not going out there until you get yeah. us some real fucking food? Like, yeah. like, stop making this. No, the issue here is that there was niggas making 100,000 mm-hmm. and there was niggas making 15,000.
Yeah.
Okay. And guess what? I need my $10,000 check to clear. So that 700 you getting or that 800 you getting, I don't know what to tell you.
You don't know about that. Yeah. Yeah. I need my
I don't know clear. What to tell you. And, yeah. and I think that, listen, I never was a fan of And One. I think that they dropped the ball in several instances. Having Absolutely. Vince Carter wear your shoes in the most epic dunk contest ever, and before he landed, you motherfuckers should have been in his locker room.
Absolutely.
I don't care who you needed to pay off or what you needed to do. So the reason that you guys lost isn't because Nike was some, you know, well, yes,
yeah,
Nike
was a behemoth. Yeah, but they were trying to make Nike like the villain. It was like, yes, really they, the villain.
Yes, they because everyone wants to be able to do that. But the reality is you guys dropped the ball. You guys spent a ton of money in corporate offices, putting in fucking basketball courts and all sorts of unnecessary shit. It was very corporate bro pre-2008 shit.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? And that's why you fucking blew through your bread. And that's why your bottom line was shit. And to be quite honest, your fucking sneakers were terrible. That okay? Too. Sneakers were not very good. Okay?
It wasn't comfortable.
The slip-ons did well. The two-tone joints did well. But yeah. other than that, you guys had a bunch of funny-looking sneakers that ended up in DSW. My nigga, so I don't really know
Marshalls and shit.
Marshalls, yes, nigga. You had the whole Burlington factory rack, word, nigga. Was and ones.
Word.
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, it was. But it's an interesting thought. I mean, y'all should definitely check it out. It's because even if you're not a basketball fan, it's kind of bigger than just basketball. It's kind of like about the arc of this kind of thing blowing up and them not taking advantage of it in the proper way and the fallout of that and da da da.
And I want to say, too, before we jump, I think the reason, one, I don't think Main Event Wally Dixon agreed with Shane.
He didn't. He was quiet in the last spot.
But what he did was a very black man thing. And so if they were in a barbershop and it was only us around, he would have called him on that shit.
Absolutely.
I promise you, he would have called him on that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But because it was on camera, and because it was in front of white folks, he was absolutely not going to contradict that black man about yeah. feeling like he had been shortchanged yeah. by these white folks. And he sucked it up. Also, I would add, he also still operates in the street ball space.
I'm about to say, while he's eaten to a certain point. So he,
of
he
course,
like, I'm not going to let you fuck my shit up, bro. Like,
because I took this opportunity.
Yeah, and you didn't.
And you didn't.
You wanted to smoke weed and fuck broads. And so that's
the part. That's the part they all skip over. That's yep. the part they all skip over. The weed, the hanging out, the fucking around yeah. on the road, the living that life. Like, you know, and you know what? Rafa was in the fucking gym.
Yep.
And that's why. Period. That's why Milwaukee called him. And that's exactly. why he had a 10-year career in the league.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I'm going to give you one. Is R&B dead?
If Puffy don't shut the fuck up, this ain't nothing but a marketing campaign.
That's your marketing ploy, yeah.
It is. That's all it is. It's a marketing campaign because yeah. I think that we've already examined, like, we've examined the is R&B dead for a decade now, right? And yeah, there was a period of time where, at least in the definition of wanting to acknowledge the term, it was dead because we went through a phase in like when we were coming into the 10s where artists did not want to be affiliated with the name R&B. They'd be anything else, alt soul, trap soul, something noir soul. They use soul, but they wouldn't use art. I'm not R&B. And that's actually the label's fault, I say, label and radio.
Yeah, yeah, it was absolutely right. Yeah,
urban adult is a slow moving format.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a format that artists get stuck in.
And labels didn't want to pay money to really market and promote R&B artists because it is more expensive to especially on the woman's side, to promote them.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a way to get out of that. We'll just throw everything, like you said, in adult contemporary radio, no matter who it is, right. No matter how young they are, and how fresh it is, we throw it over there into graveyard.
If your song is under 90 BPMs, you're going to adult R&B.
They're going
to
play your shit next to Charlie Wilson.
Yeah, and it's like, and it aged artists. That's why it took Jasmine Sullivan so long to get the look she really needed, honestly, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, but Puff is off the mark because, you know, he's got his new deal with Motown. He's doing this new album. It's R&B based. And, you know, had he done this right after the King of R&B argument a couple years ago, this might have worked. But you can't tell me when motherfuckers are actually watching the Soul Train Awards again, and when we got, you know, Ari and Summer,
Lucky and Day,
and Lucky, and you know,
SZA, and you know, SZA, and I mean, there's so like, many.
There's like an actual, you could put together a motherfucking R&B lineup now again. Absolutely. Victoria Monet, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could actually put together. The kids are there. They're there. Mm-hmm. The talent's back, and you can't do this, Puff, like, after we're coming off this era of catalog sales escalating and people embracing 90s R&B.
Man, Can We Talk becoming like an anthem, and you know what I'm saying?
Can We Talk is an anthem, and niggas is sampling shit from the 80s and 90s. Like, it's just, it's a...
Usher doing a residency out there in Vegas, killing it.
Right, he done extended his residency.
I'm
like,
going to that, by the way.
Oh,
I am too. I'm going next year now that he's to visit again. Same. You know, when we had like fucking what you call it, Silk Sonic. Like, you just can't.
You sound crazy, bro. You sound crazy.
Like, this is. I've not listened to new hip hop or really any hip hop in a smooth 6 or 7 years. So, right. Like, this is a firm R&B household. So, I don't know what he is talking
about. I'm only talking about, and I'm the most get off my lawn nigga. Aside from Sean,
it's definitely Sean.
I don't listen to nothing new, and I've listened to more new music in the past year.
I'm not surprised is the right term, but I was. It kind of threw me a little bit that he was able to pull like Tim and some of the other people in to this conversation. It's like. Yeah, but Tim, you working with new niggas and you're doing a good job. Like, you know it's not dead.
Right.
You know, so why
niggas don't want to, niggas don't want to, again, it's that black man shit of not wanting to like pull a nigga coattail in public and be like, yo, wildin'. Or sometimes it just don't really be worth the argument. Like, I know several niggas that I just won't even,
He is definitely one of them niggas. Like,
but the reality is too is that yes, there are clearly, even though I'm not necessarily heavily into the R&B space, there are definitely people who are making R&B music, and there are definitely people like, we understand now that music is very different. How we consume music is very different. Right. Okay, you're not listening to fucking 98.7 in the morning. Yeah. Getting ready for work, like it's not the opening scene of Jungle Fever, my nigga. Like, that's not happening, right? Yeah. So how we consume means we have to be a little more precise and pointed in how we look for our music or where we go for our music,
right?
And it's gonna take a little time, and maybe we're not gonna get everything right, and maybe we're not gonna, you know what I'm saying? Like jump on something immediate in the way that maybe we used to. But there are some people out there. Now, there are also some R&B singers out there who are listed as R&B singers who really can't sing.
And we're filled rappers.
And here's what happens. They go to perform, and it's fucking awful. And that's just the reality. Like, I'm not saying any names. And like, I've seen several clips where it's like, that nigga, you can't sing. You would not ever get a lead in the choir, ever. Okay, the minister of music, nigga, is not calling on you. Exactly. I promise you that. So
bury your ass back there with the baritones.
Let's also talk about that. Like, church choirs are not what they used to be. It's
yeah. They ain't choiring.
They're not choiring. Instruments in church very much anymore. But it's very much a set of drums and a backing track.
It's all cyclical right. because that used to be the main two places, and it's probably
that was the fertile ground where people were, and in schools.
So
here's another thing.
Go ahead.
Here's another thing I want to just say. The walk, like, so there was a space for young R&B artists to hone their craft. Mm-hmm. It was in small clubs, 400 or 500 people, maybe 1,000 people clubs. You would go there, you know, you do your 3 or 4 songs, you get your little cheesy dance steps and shit like that, that you, you know, your mom's made your outfits, right? Like, that was the fertile ground to where that stage show and that presence and that really, that working your shit out really happened. And I think that with how that club scene has changed into, you know, everything is bottle service and we'd rather just pay this IG model as a host to come through and not really give somebody $500 to, you know what I'm saying, do a little performance or whatever. Like, I
and
really
clubs
think
don't
that
have
shit
house
hurt.
Bands no more. Now, if you come clubs through, are, perform the track, some shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It's not the same. We used to have, there was Cafe Y in New York.
Yeah.
You would go down to this.
Yeah, there was that.
Ron Grant shit.
Ron Grant Showcase,
which is the first place I saw Kelly Price for the first time at Ron Grant Showcase. Cafe Y is still there, actually.
Then there was Honeysuckles. That was around. That's the first place that Whitney ever performed.
Chaz and Wilson's.
And who was an Ashford Simpson spot? They have a spot. What's
Sugar Bar.
Yeah, Sugar Bar. So it was all these spots in New York, except we see this up
and
coming town.
And you would go and get live music. So it was where a lot of those guys that sung background, a lot of young ladies that sung background would go in, they'd hone their skills, they'd connect. You know, you would just really see the growth and the maturation in a lot of R&B artists because they had a place to go. It's like, yeah, nigga, your kid is 7 feet, but if they don't go out and practice, if they don't go out and play, if they don't go out and work those skills, then it's all for naught. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't. That's what I think is happening right now. Everything is so instantaneous that we don't really give young artists a chance to really grow into their own and really be great. Like, that's what I love about Jeff Robinson, to be quite frank, is that he purposefully and strategically grooms his artists in a way that they are absolutely prepared and ready for those fucking big stages that he has worked and cultivated to get them on. Her, Alicia Keys, like, we going to work these muscles out. We going to get this shit perfected to a way that's going to, you know what I'm saying, be a difference maker when you go out there.
Yeah, so when you get on the BET Award stage or Coachella, whatever it is, you're going to knock them out the park. They're going to be like, who the hell was that? Because you worked all those muscles for so long. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But it was, as we know, because we know Puff, was a marketing employee, but I think this kind of backfired on him because it made him the old man on get off my lawn, nigga. It made him the old man, like, y'all young niggas don't know shit.
And Tory Lanez.
And Puff looking really uncle-ish. He's looking so uncle-ish right now.
And Tory Lanez, bro, like, you thought that bringing on Tory Lanez was like, I mean, was that not the most, like, to me, that, to me, the conversation is whatever. But to me, that's the part of being sort of isolated and tone deaf about what the people are feeling and saying is just beyond my comprehension, dude. Like, beyond my comprehension.
What you got Carisha on payroll for if you're not going to at least let her tell you what's happening?
Yeah, because it was popping. And by the way, peace to Carisha. I really think, you know, again, it's a different world, it's a different generation. I get all that. I think she's really doing a great job at this talk show thing. Like, she's beautiful, first of all. And she's asking all the questions that people want to answer. Now, you don't have to answer them, but she's going to ask you. She I saw the clip of the sweetie thing, and she's like, you think Quavo was cheating? Like, no person would really ask that on a that form.
Right.
So peace to her, because she's really, like, getting to it, and I think she's found a whole nother career. And sidebar, peace to Kevin Hart, too. Because who knew he'd be a great talk show host? I didn't know. His interviews are really good. Really, really interesting.
I'm curious, though, to see what it is when he's not with people that he knows. Because right now he's doing it with people.
Well, he did Sweetie. Yes. I don't think he knew her that well. But yeah, he did like Jay-Z. Does some people, like, does big people that he knows. But like, I enjoy it. We'll see where it goes. But I'm enjoying both of them, both of those interviews. I wanted to mention, was something else good I wanted to mention. That might be a little messy. Have y'all been watching the Murder, Inc. series?
No, but we haven't talked about Irv.
No. I have. You know I can't listen to Irv Gotti talk longer than
the series is actually really good. It's not like Irv is Irv, you know, Irv is Irv, or he's gonna do the Irv shit, right? By the way, Naomi, they got Darcelle Lawrence is on there a lot too. Nice to see her. She's always a sweet lady. Sweet girl. But the series in and of itself is really, it's actually really captivating. Irv is Irv, again, I gotta put that to the side, but it's really rolled out nicely, the story of what happened and everything. Do we discuss the drink? We didn't discuss the drink champs thing. I don't think it happened.
We
probably talked about that on the chat.
The Patti LaBelle drink champs, not the Irv.
Yeah. So Irv is on drink. You know, I mean, drink champs has been wild. Did you see the
first of all? Shout out to Nori I know drink champs has been a thing for a minute. But Nori is hitting a stride with Drink Champs right now, where it's like he is finding this balance between like just the music and hip hop shit and like with Patty and you know what I mean, stuff like that. And it's getting entertaining in a way that's more than just a bunch of niggas sitting around talking about rap shit. Yeah. You know what I mean?
See, the thing, Issa and Patty interviews as an example. Because of who they are, especially Miss Patty, Irv definitely brought it way down. He wasn't really, he was only drinking wine. He wasn't going ham. He did not smoke. So his mind was clear. And obviously his reverence and respect for Miss Patty made that interview great because he wasn't saying stupid shit. And even with Issa, like, you know, they took shots on that, but Issa wasn't only getting blasted, you know, so right. Like it kind of tempered it a bit. But then the new one he just put out with Turk from Hot Boys. They blast in the B2K one. They blasted, and so he's back to the bullshit with them niggas. Like, you know, Turk is talking about he was fucking niggas in jail, and this is like, oh my god, where are we going with this, bro? Like, you know, what's happening?
I want to be all up in drink camps. Like,
what you say? What now? What you saying? No.
I want to be in it. I just can't.
That's what he said. That's what a boy has said. He said, I was fucking in jail.
I'm sorry, Inka.
I was just going to say the format.
I want y'all to know that Sean had his screen off. Turn that shit back on.
What the boy said? Yeah, so but I know what you said. The show is becoming pop culture now. Naima, like, it's becoming like a pop culture thing. And the interviews are getting bigger and bigger because it's become a thing.
But let's talk about Irv. Irv is a prime example of the kind of old ass industry niggas that I am so tired of who haven't evolved yet. Much like Puff himself, who has evolved on one level but not on many others. This motherfucker, the clip that went viral, because I ain't even gonna pretend I watched the whole thing, was Irv talking about Ashanti.
Yes.
And I think it's fairly common knowledge at this point-ish, common-ish knowledge that Ashanti and Irv had a thing. While Ashanti was signed to Murder, Inc. as a very young tender.
19. She was 19.
Yes, it was a very young tender. And Irv was very much married with children and family.
Yes.
And then Ashanti started dating Nelly.
Yes.
Irv tells this story about how he quote-unquote discovered that Ashanti was dating Nelly, as though it were some revelation that she was.
It was a God. God wanted him to know.
God wanted him to discover. God wanted him to know because clearly Ashanti was trying to creep if she was in a fucking NBA game. Oh, sorry, Abby. If she was in a whole NBA game with Nelly. Yes, she's trying to be very secretive by being on screen at an NBA game with Nelly. But he was like, you know, I'm sitting at home, I'm watching the NBA package, and this was God. This is God. He wanted me to see this. And he's talking like they were a couple and she decided to leave. Sir,
she cheated on him.
A single woman cannot leave a married man, sir, because there's no place for her to leave. Like, where is she leaving? You are at home with your wife watching this happen on the TV. Like, I just...
And he keeps claiming that he was already split up from the wife. And the, but it's like, yeah, but you were not divorced from your wife.
I'm curious.
I did your wife know?
What does he want us to do with this information? Are we supposed to now villainize Ashanti? Because
No, I could tell you. I could tell you what it is. What I think it is.
Among us.
It is. So you have a bad bitch gauge with who you fucked with,
mm-hmm.
And she is top tier on that gauge right now. So the association of, like, yeah, that was my shorty.
Yeah.
Right.
Is definitely one that's like, oh, word?
Yeah, that's you? Oh, shit.
Like, it's even higher. Her gauge might, her joint might be, her stock might be even higher now because she's aging so wonderfully.
I was getting ready to say, if she had completely fallen off the face of the earth and nobody was checking for her, if she was a manager at Key Food now, and was like, you know, had, you know, married and, you know, put on a couple pounds,
kids,
had
some kids, yeah.
And, you know, lived in an 1800 square foot home out in Long Island.
I'm saying
if she was living a very average life, if she was not living the life
of somebody who had number one now.
If she was not in Dubai,
drag me on this podcast.
If she was not Dubaiing and jet hopping,
right?
Right. I don't necessarily know. This is a conversation. I don't think that this is coming up in the same context.
Yes, because she's still hot, still popping.
And I think that what happens is that Irv is also, and this is no shot, this is just who he is. Irv is one of those old school New York loyalty niggas. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they do is they, you know, and I won't even say they, because I'm probably in that age group, is that we can be a little bit blind with that loyalty, right? And like, mm-hmm. He sees what she's doing in terms of her music as an affront to him.
Yeah.
In terms of trying to get her masters back or re-record or do things in a way to circumvent.
He's doing it to hurt him.
That's all he sees.
Yeah.
So he doesn't necessarily, so for him, this isn't just about the ego of that part. It's also about feeling like, yo, without me,
you wouldn't have had
the career. Yeah, you wouldn't have had the career. You wouldn't have had those records. Without me. So for you to kind of now try to cut me out the pie is just to for a guy like that, he sees that as the ultimate slap in the face.
And he also sees it like that. That's 100%. He also, I think in his mind, he thought him and Ashanti would be together still today.
Do you think so?
I don't think he thinks that.
But I just think that he thought that that would be like a long thing and they'd be doing a thing.
I think he thought they'd be cool.
Yeah, to be the dip back and forth every night again. That's still kind of my shorty when I wanted. And I'm getting all this money now. And
you mean he thought he'd still be able to fuck?
Yes. Today. And the fact that she was like,
okay, that's very different.
She was like, okay. I'm not fucking with you no more.
She never looked back.
She never looked back. And he's like, but what?
Now that's the part.
I'm living for her silence.
I know you're trying to jump in, Sean, but that's the part, Jeffrey, that's fucking with him is that she don't even say his name.
She denies they even messed around.
She don't even acknowledge that nigga. When they was on stage for the Fat Joe joint, she gave him like a church hug and kept it pushing. There wasn't no tension. She don't acknowledge him. She don't talk shit about him. She don't say good things about him. Like, she doesn't even say his name. And that's the thing. And it is nothing. Like, nobody will try to claim you harder than the motherfucker you want to pretend you never dealt with ever. that nigga will try to claim you to the grave. That's what's happening. Like, Inca, like, you preach it. Like, it will, like, I have one boyfriend who was in the industry. One. This nigga will make sure if we are in the same place, everybody knows. Like, we dated 20 years ago. He will make sure. Mm. I love you so much. Da, da, da. Like, all that. I'd be like, fam, please, really?
It was 90 years ago.
Like, can we not? But it's like a earth thing. I need to still mark my territory. I need to claim first. I need to claim my, like, all of that type.
Here's the other thing too. Irv is a lot of things. Stupid has never been one of them.
No.
And he understands that there's a level of salaciousness that does come with this, that he knows motherfuckers will eat up. And exactly what happened. He said that shit, and the blogs, you know what I'm saying, caught on fire. And, like, you know, look, there's certain people that really get twisted out and bent out of shape when you make jokes about him. I don't really peg him as one of those dudes. So I definitely don't think he's giving a fuck about the memes and all of the jokes and the, you know, that shit isn't moving the needle for a guy like that. You know what I'm saying? He's on. And I don't know if he closed that deal or not, but he's got a,
I think he did.
So he just closed a deal that is, I don't have to work ever again money. Like everything I'm doing from this point forth is because I want to money.
Yeah.
Like there's no reason for him, because Irv's got to be 50.
Yeah.
50,
51.
Early 50s.
Yeah. Probably 51. Same age as Jay-Z. Same age.
Yeah. Like
way too old to talk about. Which means you're going
to start talking about it. Yeah.
Too old to talk about your old girlfriend from the 90s. That's,
I know. Can I just live my life and do
nobody
and not, like,
I said this the other day, nobody, and I mean nobody, like, talks more than a New York nigga between 35 and 55 about
what happened back in the day. We made $1 million an hour, nigga. I was getting
nigga, it, the story, that every time that story is told, the fish on the reel is bigger. Every single time, more so.
Nobody is more possessive than the married nigga you was not supposed to be messing with in the first place.
Yeah, because he's like, how dare
nobody.
You?
Nobody.
Yeah,
how dare you actually go get in a relationship?
You cheat on me, and I find out while I'm with my wife.
I'm at home with my wife and my family.
What you mean you ain't gay?
And I find out while I'm eating dinner with my family.
Jay-Z fucked these niggas up with Song Cry. I was gonna get right back, and niggas,
I was just fucking them girls. I was gonna get right back. Niggas
took really that to heart.
Niggas be playing that shit on voicemails.
How dare you?
I have a conversation. They playing that shit on feet. Nigga, get your ass together.
How dare you? She not loyal.
Go home to your wife.
Go away.
Crazy. Yeah. So God bless you, Irv. Peace to Ashanti. Like I keep saying on the show.
Also, you know, shout out to what's her ex-wife's name? Deb
Lorenzo.
Deb, girl, God bless you.
Yeah.
Somebody like, was like, I'm watching that nigga.
I'll watch it at some point. I'm really happy to see. I know Darcelle is still working with him.
Yeah.
And they got the tails and shit. So I'm really, I mean, I'll watch it at some point. But this is, I'm a bit, I can't front. Like, I'm a little documentaried out.
Yeah,
like, it's like at this point. We're at like the documentary that we just did.
The documentary about the documentary.
Yo, fam, it's like this was just like to me, and I guess maybe again, this is the warped sense of feeling like you had lived it. Like we were there. I don't necessarily know that like this just happened in my head, right?
You know, 2000s
is like that's not far off. But I mean, I guess this is probably what Motown niggas felt in 85 when motherfuckers was making Motown documentaries. So I get it.
It's like, again, nigga. Again.
I just want to add that the one other thing about the Irv thing that bothered me is that the one clip that I have seen from the Murder, Inc. doc was him talking about how Ashanti would be in the studio with the juicy sweatpants and the ass fat. It's now just like, nigga.
Niggas doing nigga shit. Real quick, I just want to mention. Running back, we talked about the biggest untold, which, you know, I just want to mention, we only get into it, was the Manti Te'o story. That shit.
This week. I think Malice at the Palace was bigger than the Manti Te'o one. But
okay, but the Manti Te'o one is wow. You know, when that whole story and I realized
I left feeling so conflicted though, because like,
exactly
what?
Yeah, I did. I did. I felt I'm
really pissed at the perpetrator for trying to make this about some trans identity shit and not about you deceiving somebody in a whole other front.
Yeah.
And like, the this trans- is not about yeah. your identity, girl. You were lying.
Forever.
You made up a person.
And then made yourself the victim.
Great.
Yeah.
You're a two soul. Like, God bless. 2022, people do that. I'm, you know, whatever. I'm here for the girls. But you are a liar who ruined this man's chances at so much.
Yeah, he lost all kinds of paper. Yeah.
I don't know.
Making your death?
Well, no. Let me clarify.
That your grandmama died?
No. Let me clarify. I definitely think I don't know how the person identifies, but I definitely think what they did was wild and crazy. Like, I'm not at all saying that they, you know, that what they did was light. But I don't know that this, I never saw Manti Te'o as a stud like that. As like playing his career.
Yeah. He was aight.
So I yeah.
It's always everybody that comes from Notre Dame. Like they
yeah. Yeah. And so I didn't think that it ruined his career in like this like heavy way. Would he probably have gotten drafted higher? Maybe.
Notre Dame
maybe.
And all that.
But yeah. I think you're the thing about that's the one thing to me about football is that because there's so many spots. Like, they really don't lose spots for motherfuckers that can deliver. Like, if you can deliver on that field, they don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
They really don't give a fuck. Like, clearly, they have murderers. Like, motherfuckers, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
White beaters and all kind of shit. Yeah.
White beater, murderer, all that shit, nigga. If you run in a 4.3,
you lit.
Okay, and you can bench press 225 pounds, you know, 50 times.
Yeah.
They're picking you.
Yeah.
To an extent, do we know how like locker room culture and morale and rapport plays into this? Because if you're a nigga on a team that's like weird,
niggas gonna clown you. No, niggas is gonna clown you, and they're gonna do all that. But you know what they're gonna do when you fucking make that tackle in the backfield? Like no one is like. Yeah. Ew, he made the tackle for a loss, or oh my god, he sacked the quarterback. I still don't want to fuck with that nigga. Like, nigga, we won because he did X, Y, and Z. Like, that's you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a level of from everything that I've seen. Sure, yeah. I definitely think it was a hardship for him when he first came in. Mm. And I think that because he comes from this very isolating family,
isolated culture,
you know, this isolated. But also, I think his family in particular is very isolating with the religious views. And because they have such big extended families, it is not necessary to go outside of your family. Right?
I like think you're if always you with are a non-white person that's LDS, that is an isolation I can't even imagine because LDS don't even fuck with you.
Yeah. This is my theory. You know me, I'm going to jump out the window. My theory is the boy. I was going to be crass. I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to be crass. I'm about to say the boy like the pussy. But strike that from the record.
No, I get full virgin from this nigga until he was in the league.
I don't think he's. I watched that over and over again. I definitely don't think he's gay. What I think he is I think he is a square. And I think that he grew up in a space of, and this is something that I've had to, you know, kind of recognize. When kids grow up in environments where there is like this very traditional one, you know, father, mother, very down the middle of the road. You know, my father is not wayward. He ain't in the street. He ain't coming in all sorts of hours of the night. That's really kind of what they aspire to be. And so I think that, again, that coupled with the fact of what he saw versus the church. And all of those things really puts him at a disadvantage for the rest of the world. And so I think that that's why he kind of fell for that shit, because in his mind, he just really couldn't wrap his head around somebody doing all of this to lie. You know, for us, for, you know, teenage kids, it's like, yeah, people lie about little dumb shit, but nobody was doing
that.
We didn't know people were doing this to that extent. There's literally, there's an entire fucking series on MTV about people doing this, right? So we know that this
still is still taping to this day, which is wild.
So we know this is still happening, but I think that it's very easy for young, impressionable minds, particularly those that are still forming. And while he was physically mature, he was not emotionally mature at all. He was probably a city 13. Mm-hmm. You know, he's probably a 16, 13, 14-year-old maybe. Mm. And I think it's hard for us to wrap our heads around that.
I don't agree now. I'll say what I'm saying. I think the boy liked the boys, right? And I find, and I don't give a shit if he does. This is what I think. I think that he was looking forward to going to USC because of the tradition of Polynesian players going there, you know, Junior Seau, Troy Polamalu. They have a history of Anthony Aminu, a history of it, and going on that. But I also think he was looking forward to going to LA to kind of to be able to kind of experiment a bit, right? Then when he got forced to go to Notre Dame, but remember, he was literally crying when he did his college shit because he was so mad that he had to go. Right to Notre Dame. I think that I don't think he was looking for this catfishing thing. But I think and I'm talking shit. But I think when it happened, it was a very convenient story to explain to this whole big ass campus, which he is one of the most popular people on the campus, why he did not ever have a girlfriend. He never had a girlfriend in 4 years because he kept saying, she lives here, she lives away, she lives away. And I think he used that story as a buffer to be like, oh, why, you know, Kathy like you, Sharon like you, Michael,
there's probably a little bit of that too.
That's why he accepted her back when she came back from the dead. He was like, bet, I do not have to explain now this girl's dead why I don't have a girlfriend. This is my theory.
But I also think, like you said, okay, he didn't have any girlfriends, right? But there's also no boyfriends, like to sort of counteract that.
He wasn't gonna do that. He was never gonna do that. He was scared of what his father would have done if he got caught. Well,
I don't think he's gay, Jeff. I don't think he's part of this.
But let me explain. Even if it was not sexual, I'm not saying that he was. What I'm saying is, if he is gay, if he had the, at least this is my assumption, if he is gay, if he had any inkling that he was gay and he was gravitating to a circle of, you know, young gay men trying to figure out, you know, where they are in this space, right? I think somebody would have said something at some point. There might have been intimate relationships and not necessarily sexual, but like, oh, me and Manti used to hang out all the time, or we were, you know, we had conversations and we would be up all night. I think that that's usually somebody would have said something. But what I think it was is, I really think he is one of those, this is my girlfriend and I will not cheat on my girlfriend. And doing anything else with another girl would be considered cheating on my girlfriend. I think he's of that.
Did y'all talk about this already? Is he Mormon?
Yeah.
Oh, that's exactly it. They don't do that shit.
Yeah. They don't, you know what I'm saying? So
like literally, you know, Jeff, they get kicked out of school for having sex in college. That's why like half the football team is married for that very reason.
You can't even drink coffee.
More than half the football team is married just so they can have sex at school.
I don't think he's gay. I think he is, and he probably still is, a very naive young man. You know, to me, you know who
they don't be knowing shit about sex.
He gives me, you know what, the kind of energy he has. I sent $30,000 to a Nigerian prince for him to come home. That's the energy he gives to me.
Very 90 day fiance.
Yeah, he just doesn't have he sees the good in people. He operates under the premise that everyone is operating like him, right? Like nobody would do the, now. Obviously, what
Faith Mormon explains so much to me because I haven't watched it.
Yeah,
that explains everything.
All right. Well, I think let's move on.
He is married now to a very lovely he is.
She's
young
very
lady.
Beautiful. But I think
they have a daughter.
I think
leave that man alone.
I'm leaving the boy alone. Let's move on. We'll close it out with start with Ari Spears and Lizzo, and we can slide in Ari Spears and Tiffany Haddish. So Ari Spears, longtime comedian. Is he? I think he's Brooklyn guy, not the Bronx. He's a Brooklyn guy, right? Aries. Like the zodiac sign. Anyway, New York comedian, been around a long time on Mad TV years ago, has done a lot of stand-up, comedy jam, blah, blah, blah. So somebody was interviewing him, I don't know if it was Vlad TV, but somebody's blog was interviewing him, and asked him about, the question was weird, because you could tell that the interviewer said the question looking for it was almost like he was setting him up for a joke. Like, I'm going to ask you about Lizzo.
Because it was Vlad, and that's what the fuck Vlad does.
Yeah, but it wasn't actually Vlad.
No, that wasn't.
It wasn't Vlad?
It wasn't Vlad. No, it wasn't Vlad. But Vlad sometimes has other people interview on his thing, on his platform. So it wasn't actually Vlad. But whoever the guy was, he said, you know makes adult music, man? Lizzo. And then he said, you like Lizzo? And then Aries goes into, like, I can't get past the fact.
I can't get past her. The shit emoji.
And then he goes into this whole thing, which is crazy because he's very overweight himself. And then he's doing, he's shitting on her and blah, blah, blah. The internet swarmed on him and beat him to a bloody pulp for doing this. He tries to clap back with a video of him in a hotel bed with no shirt and a fitted on. He's looking crazy and it just got really messy for Aries. So then it comes out a few days after this that allegedly that Ari Spears and Tiffany Haddish did a skit for Funny or Die, which is I don't think that's still around anymore. It's like a comedy platform.
It's still around. It's just not in the same form as its original format.
Okay.
Originally it was like YouTube where you could upload.
Yes.
I think since they got bought by something corporate, they now have monitors, and that's how the video was taken down. So it's not alleged. This actually happened.
Yes. Yeah. This part happened. So they shot a video of these two kids. It was supposed to be a PSA for pedophilia.
Hold on. I think it was called like Through a Pedophile's Eyes, which was
something like that.
Supposed to be like a funny dark skit.
Be careful who you leave your kids around, or something like that.
Right. Before we go there, like back to the Lizzo thing, people online, like, of course, everybody has to be devil's advocate. And, you guys are coming for Aries the same way that he came for Lizzo and being like fat shaming about it. And it's not, I don't think it was that. Lizzo bothers nobody. Her music is literally about self-love, uplifting, the people. She's very pro-Black. She's very pro-woman. She don't bother nobody. So for him to jump out the water, out of nowhere, looking like someone who is not well cared for, and coming for
that was nice how you said that, not well cared for. That was good.
He doesn't look cared for. He doesn't look like he takes his medicine and washes all the time.
He definitely looks like he doesn't have a woman in his life.
He absolutely has deteriorated from those Mad TV promo shots, because I saw the side-by-side, to what he looks like today.
He looks like he has either liver disease or like
diabetes.
He has something that's affecting his skin tone. And it's
he does not look well cared for. So for you to come at somebody who is in extremely good shape, who makes good music, can play a flute, twerk, sing full out, do full choreography.
All that. Because we know
splits and shit. Because
we know you're breathing with your mouth open, Aries. Like, come on.
Composing her own music, doing all these things, and you want to come for her because she's not in the shape that you find attractive. Who the fuck are you? That was my whole thing. It was just like, nobody even asked you about that.
It was wild. I don't know.
Anyway, but moving to the pedophilia shit.
Real quick, that really reflected like the way a lot of niggas think, which is like, I can look like shit, but you can't, like, as a woman. You got to look like an IG model at all times for me to be interested in you. And
it's crazy to me that, like, fat is the worst thing that you can be.
Yeah, it's crazy. Is it? Yeah. No, it's not.
No, it's terrible.
There's a million
But what's crazy to me is that it'll be a fat nigga that tells you that you're fat.
Like, but that's what I'm saying. That was the thing with Aries. It's like, bro, you like crazy out of shape. And like Inka said, and don't look well cared for.
So you
like,
don't look good.
So who are you to say? Who are you to say this about this woman who's winning Grammys and shit and like opening? Like, what are you talking about, bro? Like,
And again, dudes talking about what women look like and all.
Yeah. She's not bothering nobody. She's never probably even know who you were before this. Mm-hmm. So for you to just go in with Looney Tunes, but then back to the pedophilia thing. So it comes out that apparently Tiffany Haddish recruited the two kids in that skit via a woman that she was friendly with. The mother is a woman that she was friendly with.
And the story is giving grooming.
Yes.
Like, I got real close to this woman.
Yep. And then brought them in and then like was coaching them through the skit. Like, no, do it like this. And, do it like this and make these type of noises.
And when they didn't do it exactly the way she wanted, there was like yelling and screaming.
Girl,
what?
Yeah, like, what are you doing? So, the mother is trying to sue now. She was like representing herself. I don't think any lawyers.
So the mother already sued Aries and got a settlement.
Okay.
But the daughter, and this was some time ago, the daughter wasn't named in it. It was the mother and I think the son, but the mother spent all the money, right? So it's worth noting that the daughter has full custody of her brother at this point.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So there's an estranged relationship with the mother. And the mother herself, the mother to me sounds definitely like part of the problem. And I read a quote from the mother that was like, I was almost suicidal and I was almost doing, and it's like, okay, but what about your kids, fam?
Yeah, so it's all about her.
Right. And apparently all of them are in various counseling. For her and her brother, it was for them to be able to like work through their trauma, you know what I mean? And get to a point where they could talk about things, because the sister felt really bad. She felt like, because she was in a different clip for Tiffany and that was something suggestive. And then she was at the house when the thing with her brother was shot, but she was downstairs. And she said her brother came downstairs very upset and she didn't know what had happened, and she's always carried this guilt of like not protecting her brother. And we should say for the record that the accusation isn't of, you know, penetration or anything like that, but it's sexualized scenarios.
Yeah, put them in weird situations. Yeah.
It's touching, it's like, you know, inappropriateness, etc. So the thing is that there's no question of Aries' involvement, but I don't know what the sister is going to be able to do since he has already previously settled something with her mom. But she has named Tiffany in this one. And first, Tiffany's lawyer said, you know, this woman has been trying to, first the mother, now this woman has been trying to pursue these allegations against Tiffany for years. Like, the mother was unsuccessful. Now she's sending her daughter out to do it. I have the impression that the daughter is basically like, I'm trying to take care of us since my mom ain't take care of us type shit. But then Tiffany tweeted or posted or something like, I can't really talk about it because it's ongoing, but I regret being part of it. And I was like, bitch, I know your lawyer just had a heart attack. like what? How is this not talking about it? Like, this is the opposite of not talking
kind
about
of admit,
it.
You're admitting guilt.
Yeah, she was like, I regret being a part of it and something. So I'm like, oh, case closed. Cut the check. Go ahead, Sean.
No, I was going to say, I think what she was referring to was that I don't think there was any doubt that she was involved in getting the kids to this location and being part of having this particular skit and clip done. So I think that there's no doubt that she was a part of that. I think what she's saying in terms of what she can't get into is all of the in-between in the last several years. Mm. I think that might be what is, I think the devil is in the details. So I agree. Let me just say this too. I think two things can be true at once. I think that this is a terrible thing. It should have never occurred. It should have never happened. And I think where it gets very dicey is that these young people are still young people. Like, even though this young lady is like 21 or 22, I believe, like the fact that she's caring for a 14-year-old is very telling about the level of weight that she had probably been carrying for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people want to be in entertainment and want their children to be in entertainment, and they are willing to do things that really kind of push up right up against the edge of appropriateness quite often. I think, and this is in no defense, I think Tiffany, because of her upbringing, has a very warped and terrible sense of what is and is not appropriate.
Right.
I think that particularly, and I think that we have to remember this is several years ago, right? So I definitely feel like there is, just kind of the fact that she was not a star. She really kind of came into her own right around that time. And so oftentimes I think what the lawyers are saying is like, hey, we've had these allegations brought up before, and every lawyer leaves, which is very rare. I want to say it's very, very rare for lawyers to not take cases like this. Mm. It seems to me like there is something, they get to a certain point where they have to deliver on real, hard, factual, provable evidence.
And they got it.
Very murky.
Yeah,
and I want to say
either murky or my guess is that the mother's involvement actually fucks.
And we also have to remember that in these cases, sexual molestation, inappropriateness, lewdness, there's always this sort of like murky attempt. There's always like this very murky attempt for it to be the perfect.
Oh, damn, he went mute. I think he was going to say perfect victim.
Yeah, it's the perfect victim syndrome. Yeah. And so because these kids and because their mom do not present as perfect victims, it really puts this particular case at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
And are people looking at Tiffany sideways? Yes. And here's why people are looking at Tiffany sideways more than they're looking at Aries sideways. One, we've already established that he's a sophomore asshole who just doesn't have, this is not beyond the pale for him. But with Tiffany, here's the difference. The difference is that mother, even in whatever state she was in, gave her children to Tiffany.
Yes.
Tiffany was who was entrusted with those children.
Yep.
The reason that mother was more than likely not at that taping is because she trusted Tiffany.
And then Tiffany seems to be the one who was actively grooming Tiffany, the children over time.
Yes. Tiffany was operating as her proxy.
Yep.
The children, they have deference to Tiffany.
The Auntie Tiffany.
Because that is who their mom has relinquished them to. So all of these things, clearly, like by the reading of the article, you can kind of tell like the boy knows this is not okay. But when you're 7 years old, you don't really know or have the words or the ability to articulate that.
Yeah.
And so look, this shit is terrible. I think that this is going to be a hit for her. I don't think this is like, I'm using air quotes, I don't think this is the end of her career. I think that this is going to go the way that many of these other attempts at getting something from them has occurred. They I don't know exactly what they're all looking for. It seems to be like therapy and some other things like that. But there also is probably some punitive or other damages that they're going to be seeking. That
there's definitely going to be some cash.
I don't know that that's going to play out the way they think that it's going to play out either. I think it's going to get really, really dicey. And it's a very unfortunate event because those young people seem to have had lots of burdens on their shoulders to begin with. And this was clearly not something that they needed to be, you know, they needed added on, man.
Yeah. All right. We're going to end it on that note.
Also, I got cut off before, but fuck Ari Spears for talking about Lizzo. That shit was, that was some real whole shit. The nigga who was interviewing him, that was very, very sassy, my nigga. A lot of you niggas be on there. A lot of you niggas be on here being real spicy and real, you know, real spilling the tea and all that shit. And I want you niggas to tighten up. I want you niggas to man up, okay? And stop being sissies and acting like that. That shit is whack.
Niggas was messy. As Twitter ads goes, thinking the messiest person you know.
That shit is corny, nigga.
Yeah.
Go watch some fucking, go watch something, nigga. Go fix something, nigga. Go move something, nigga.
Go build something.
Find some business, nigga.
Niggas don't build houses anymore. In that get off my lawn vein, I just had a real quick rant, and that is stop diagnosing every famous person you don't like with autism. Stop it. Some people are just assholes.
Yes.
It's not necessarily a cognitive delay.
Assholes or awkward.
You can be awkward. Yeah. You can be unsocialized. You can be all these things and not have some internet diagnosis. Stop it. It's pissing me off.
I agree. Everybody's not on the spectrum. Some people just dickheads.
Some of y'all just fucking weird.
Yeah, some people just dickheads. You know what I'm saying? Period. End. It's okay. Antonio Brown is a dickhead.
Right.
Yes.
He's not fucking
John
suffering
McEnroe,
from mass.
Though dickhead. He was a progeny, is a dickhead.
Yeah, that's it.
Some people are just angry.
Exactly.
Mass murderers, y'all might have a different, you know.
Yeah. And everybody who's on the spectrum, and everybody who's on the spectrum doesn't go out and just murder people that act crazy. Like, it's two different
and
things.
And also, the other thing is that autism is not a catch-all phrase for social disorders, right?
Yeah.
There are social disorders, which is very different than cognitive disorders. So some people might have social disorders, but that's a very different thing. Like, actually, there are more people who are sociopaths than people who are autistic, possibly. Yeah. But when you say somebody's a sociopath, they're like, oh my God, you're being dramatic. No, there's a lot of sociopaths out there.
a lot of niggas that feel empathy that are not autistic.
Exactly.
Not all sociopaths are like mass murderers. There's a lot. You know some. I promise you do.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. The that nigga's crazy guys.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. So on that note, we're going to wrap it up. The first episode of the fourth
fall
quarter
season.
Of the fall season.
One more shout out. I just gotta shout out the resident octogenarian on the Pop Life. I was looking back through old episodes. There's episodes of the show from like 2008 on the internet.
Yeah.
So shout out to you for being.
Why gotta be octogenarian though? Why gotta be octogenarian though?
Don't know how old you are.
Age is a man made construct.
There is a picture of Morgan State class of 1942 and you are in it. We do not
know. Call me Jeffrey Buttons.
All I know is there is definitely a picture of Jeff in college. And they are leaning on the deuce and a quarter, and that's all I'm gonna say.
There actually is a picture of that. There actually is a picture of that. My man had one of those.
Yes, nigga, that's a real picture.
Yeah. So, shit. Anyway, yes, it's a big one day. I gotta do something to pull all the catalog together because it goes back quite far.
Yeah, we still gotta talk about your memoirs, Jeff. I ain't forgot.
Okay, well, I'm building new ones here. Let me build some more here in Atlanta.
No, nigga, it's not about the end of your life. It's just, it's only
I'm the end of my life, nigga. You have to come down tomorrow.
No, that's what I'm saying. You keep talking. No.
Jeff was around for Queen Elizabeth's
court. I'm saying you keep talking about memoirs as though you have. No, Jeffrey, what I'm saying is when we talk about you writing memoirs, you keep saying you have more to do. You don't have to wait. Obama wrote his first set of memoirs at like 43 or something like that. Yep. Like, you have chapters already that are completely
done. He was the president. He didn't blow the whistle, nigga.
I did do blow the whistle.
You did blow the whistle.
Yeah, I did do. Now, I'm going to say this. You're going to have so much
that we're not going to be able to properly edit and filter. Like,
All right. You're the writer, so I won't push back. But I'm going to say this now, but I'm hanging up on this. Oh, if Regina Hall and Sterling K. Brown didn't know blow the whistle, I was going to turn the shit over.
I bet they didn't know blow the whistle.
Put some tables in this motherfucker.
Well, Issa Rae has also never seen William Tagtale. So what even is blackness?
What is blackness?
Yeah.
I gotta talk to my West Coast black people.
Call up.
All right.
So we'll see y'all next week, hopefully. We're gonna keep this thing going more regular now.
All right. Later.
All right, talk to you later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook, send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.